This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
Good morning. Sue Clarke here with you for Perspective, and today an Englishman's view of Australia Day with Frank Welsh. Frank has worked in international business and banking, including service on the boards of nationalised industries, and is a member of the Royal Commission on the National Health Service. He gave all of that up to become a writer, and his most recent work is Great Southern Land, A New History of Australia, which he believes is the first substantial history of Australia to be written by a non-Australian.
As a reasonably well-informed outsider, I find the current fretfulness of Australian commentators and historians over the significance of Australia Day to be puzzling. Newspapers are full of worried questioning, argument and counter-argument. Does the arrival of the First Fleet really deserve celebrating? Is the country's progress, remarkable though this has been, negated by the initial dispossession of the Aborigines, or indeed by the subsequent serious ecological damage? But then, in the course of writing a history of the country, I've noticed that not all Australians share the opinions of academics or journalists, and I do not know how far their unease is reflected in the community at large. Certainly, in the small town in which I spent this year's Australia Day, I didn't see much anxiety. It was none of the strident patriotism that you'd find in the United States, it's true, but rather a quiet pride in being Australian, in barbecues and brass bands, in clean beaches, with a minimum of official interference, was evident. To me at least, the problem that seems to trouble the media hardly arises. January the 26, 1788, was an epochal event, not only in Australia, but in world history. Australia, hitherto little more than a geographical expression neglected by the rest of the world, began its development into a nation, and a continental nation at that, just as did France on the 14th of July in the following year, or the United States had done 11 years previously. Of course, the record of no country is entirely unsearched. The fall of Bastille was followed not only by the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the eventual overthrow of tyrannical regimes all over Europe and in South America, but also by a bloody reign of terror, in which the guillotine was erected in every French marketplace, and by nearly 30 years of warfare in which millions died. The American Revolution prolonged slavery for a generation after its final abolition in the British colonies, but the 4th and 14th of July both commemorate days which alter the whole future of the world, and which nobody thinks should be abandoned. Similarly, I'd suggest no Australian government stupidities or neglect of difficult problems, and what administration anywhere is invariably prudent, far-sighted and liberal, should be allowed to obscure the emergence of one of the most successful societies the world had ever seen. This is not just a prejudiced or personal view. In the United Nations Assessment of Human Development, prepared every year, Canada and Australia almost always figure in second or third place, Norway leading, well ahead of either the United States or Great Britain. Of course, countries celebrate not only their foundation or liberation, England being here an exception, but other events of national significance. Anzac Day in Australia and New Zealand has more resonance than either Australia or Waitangi Day. I spent the morning of the 25th of April last year in a rain-swept field of northern France, witnessing wreaths being laid on the memorial to the Australian Imperial Force, and those who complain of Australia's participation far from home in two world wars should experience for themselves the continued gratitude and goodwill of the Picardy folk. Resistance to oppression knows no geographical limits. Nations can also admit their own mistakes. Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the United States commemorates the shameful continuance of black oppression. The Holocaust Memorial Day is observed in Germany as well as in Israel. And November the 11th stands throughout Europe in remembrance of the major follies of the last century from which no country can be absolved. Should present-day Australians feel that a day must be laid aside to commemorate those things that ought not to have been done and those good things that have been left undone, Anzac Day, which finds the nation in a reflective mood, might well fit the need. Or if, like Japan, we prefer to look forward optimistically, we might celebrate Children's Day, which they do on May the 5th, Culture Day, November the 3rd, and here I should declare an interest, Respect for the Aged Day, September the 18th. But when all is said and done, Australia Day must surely continue to be observed as a proper celebration of the world's recognition of one of its most distinctive and attractive cultures, at least until Republic Day can be proclaimed, and that may not be for quite a while yet.
Frank Welsh with today's perspective, and his book, Great Southern Land, A New History of Australia, is published by Penguin Books. And you can find more details on it by going to our website. That's at abc.net.au/RN and follow the prompts to Perspective. Up next on ABC Radio National, Asia Pacific. But right now, it's 5 o'clock, news time.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs, more than 260 transmitters Australia-wide. And we're live on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/RN. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/RN/podcast.